Hi, everyone. My name is Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm region chair for Region 1, and I'm calling today from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Welcome to the Importance of Working All 12 Steps workshop. Please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Today, I'll be talking to you about Step 2. I'll be referring to the OA 12 and 12, Step 2, which is found pages 9 to 16. The March 28th reading of For Today, which is on page 88. Voices of Recovery for January the 9th and January the 10th. The February 2011 edition of Lifeline. The February 2014 edition of Lifeline, and the AA 12 and 12, page 33. So, step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. My story in OA began on September the 16th, 2002, here in Calgary. I think I've been a compulsive overeater since my teens. And possibly earlier. My parents grew up during the Depression. For them, having enough food in the house was a sign that they had survived, that they were successful. My mother was a caterer, and she showed her love by putting a lot of food out, and all of our wonderful family events always revolved around wonderful food. I am the youngest of three children. I grew up in a very happy family. When I was 9 years old, both of my siblings, within the space of about 10 months, married and left home. What had been a family ritual of sitting around the dining room table and having our dinner and talking about each other's days changed almost overnight. They converted my sister's bedroom into a den. They moved the television in there and introduced TV trays. That talking about each other's day and that connection was now watching the 6 o'clock news every night. And I don't think I realized how much I missed that connection. My parents were a great example of, you know, a really good relationship. They were each other's best friends. And even at 10 years old, I felt pretty much like a fifth wheel, like I was intruding on their relationship. I'm certain my parents would be horrified to know that that's how I felt, because they were very attentive to me, but I remember that feeling. I was probably no more than 25 pounds overweight throughout most of my teen years, but, you know, this was the late 60s, early 70s, hipsters, and yeah, that just didn't work for me. I always felt sort of out of the loop. I left school halfway through grade 11 and decided I would go to secretarial college and become an adult. I got a job almost right away. One fateful night, after having too much to drink, my boss walked me home and beat me up and raped me. And I never told anyone. I hung on to that for 30 years through a marriage to my husband, which failed, through an 18-year relationship, which failed. And by the time that relationship failed, I was in OA. Thank God I was in OA. And I knew enough that I had to figure out what the common denominator in these failed relationships were. And, of course, that was me. You know, growing up, I really felt that my higher power for me was either Santa Claus or 911. I'll be really good if you do this for me. Or, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble, please help me. It didn't occur to me that I could talk to my higher power on a regular basis. I started to learn about step two by reading, you know, the OA 12 and 12. And there was so much in it that spoke to me. It says at the very beginning, many of us compulsive overeaters tend to look at this step and say, restore me to sanity, I don't need that. I'm perfectly sane, I just have an eating problem. But how sane are we really? I was a screamer and a door slammer. I had no idea how to express all of this pent-up anger and frustration that was in me. I can remember stubbing my toe, and instead of saying, oh, ouch, ouch, that hurts, I remember slamming doors and never understanding why I couldn't express that feeling that was inside of me. The page goes on, page 9, it goes on to say, we've eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick of eating. We have continued to overeat, knowing all the while we were disfiguring and maiming our bodies. Those of you who know me know this story. I said that I cooked Christmas dinner for my family 25 years in a row. I figured that out. And they never got the turkey with the skin on. And they never noticed. I was an ice cream leveler. You know, when you take a scoop out and then you have to sort of level it out again. I just thought that everybody did that. Although I can remember feeling great shame. And I guess that's why I leveled it off, so that no one would know that I'd actually been in there and eating that ice cream. It goes on page 10 to say, then horrified by what we were doing to ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We joined diet clubs and spas. We had ourselves hypnotized and analyzed. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. Well, in 2008, my knee had finally given out. My top weight was over 300 pounds. And I now have a titanium knee in my right leg. And I know that that's a direct result of carrying around all that weight for all those years. Some of the funny things that happened, I joined 3 gyms in my life, and I never went one day. I paid that money for 3 years, 3 times. You know, every month I would make that payment, but I never went because I was embarrassed. You know, I joined the gym to get healthy, but I just couldn't get past the fact that I didn't look like everybody else. It goes on in step 2 in the 12 and 12 on page 12. Compulsive overeaters are often people of extremes. We overreacted to slight provocations while ignoring the real issues in our lives. We were obsessively busy, then we were wiped out and unable to act. If my daughter were here, she would tell you about how disjointed our holiday celebrations were. I would spend days making sure that everything was perfect, driving her and my then partner crazy with all of my preparations and demanding that they help me and make sure that everything was perfect. And then when everybody arrived, I couldn't wait for them to leave. I was absolutely exhausted. It was exhausting being me. It goes on in chapter 2. It says, little by little, we saw how much pain our way of living was causing us. Gradually, we came to believe that we needed to change. When I entered my very first OA meeting, I can remember feeling a sense of kinship, a sense of belonging. They were talking about the things that I was too ashamed to talk about, even to my closest friends. It's as if I thought that they didn't know I overate. It was hard to miss, but somehow I thought that nobody knew. And going into my first meeting, it just simply felt like I had come home. Again, in step 2 in the OA 12 and 12, it says, clearly a power greater than ourselves had to be found if we were to be restored to sanity. At this point, most of us had trouble for one reason or another with step 2. Some of us did not believe in God. We despaired of finding a solution to our problems, if that meant we had to find God. In Canada here, I grew up in the Anglican Church, and I had always thought that the God of that faith was kind and gentle and loved children. It didn't occur to me that I would be loved as well. And it didn't occur to me that my issues, my everyday struggles, were something that God would even care about or I didn't think I had the right to bring those problems. He was solving world peace and everything else. What was I? It goes on to say, ours is a spiritual program, not a religious one. We have no creeds or doctrines, only our own experiences of recovery. atheists and agnostics are welcome in a way and have found recovery. It took me a while to understand the difference between a religious God and my spiritual higher power. Only through the help of several sponsors was I able to sort of understand what the difference is. To me, I'm not a regular churchgoer, but I strongly believe in my own higher power who talks to me most of the time while I'm out walking my dog. I've never been a great meditator, but I find the rhythm of my footfall as I'm walking my dog simply puts me in that state where I'm able to communicate really well with my higher power. My higher power is a great sense of humor. My previous relationship was one with someone who was really looking for someone to look after them as opposed to a relationship. It took me a while to finally come to terms with that. And I can remember thinking, I wonder how long he'll live. And my higher power sort of stopped me dead in my tracks and said to me, you know, do you hear what you're thinking? I went to my home meeting that night and I told my group about this conversation. And because of the support I had in that group, I came home that night and I ended the relationship. That was absolutely the best thing for me to do. It goes on in the OA 12 and 12. It says, in a way, God's healing power comes to us through a caring community of other compulsive overeaters. Before we joined the OA fellowship, our prayers for help might have gone unanswered simply because we were never meant to face this disease in isolation. We were meant to open up so that we might learn to truly love others. That came to me in stages. I was very closed off. I was so embarrassed and so ashamed of my behavior with food and the lies that I had told throughout my life that my very first step four was just astounding. I think anyone who has gone through the steps knows the power of step fours every time you go through it. That was only through the OA community that I was able to move through that and pass all of the pain and shame of my overeating, move on to this wonderful life that I have now. It says, we became willing to start fresh with our higher power. And that's what I did. I learned through the help of my sponsor. And, you know, none of this happened for me overnight. It took a lot of reading. It took a lot of listening to others. And that's why it's so important to go to meetings. I listened to what others talked about regarding their own higher power. And my higher power began to take shape. I think my relationship has remained that as strong as when it first appeared for me, but it's got richer over time. We have this wonderful relationship that just comes whenever I need to talk and lots of times when I least expect it. And I sometimes call it sort of that fish in the forehead moment, you know, when I get slapped with a invisible fish that wakes me up and says, wait a minute, pay attention to this. You need to learn this. And I'm really grateful for that, too. It says, then we acted as if God were really exactly what we wanted and needed our higher power to be. We became willing to let go of any concept about God which wasn't helping us to recover from compulsive eating. And I think that was my belief that I wasn't worth it, that I wasn't worth God's trouble, that there were so many other people who needed God more than me. And I realized that I have every single right to call on my higher power, to speak to my higher power, because my higher power cares and wants to know. For all of us, atheists, agnostics, and religious ones alike, coming to believe was something that happened as we began taking actions, which others told us had worked for them. Again, that's going to the meetings and listening to my sponsor and listening to my friends in recovery as to what their relationship is like with their higher power. This willingness to act on faith then was the key to step two. It was the beginning of a healing process that would relieve us of the compulsion to overeat and bring stability to our unbalanced lives. My life was so unbalanced, I was really good at deflecting. People would say, how are you? And I'd say, I'm fine, how are you? Immediately I would deflect it away. And now I'm comfortable saying to people, you know, I'm not having a good day today, but I know it's going to get better. In For Today, for the reading on March 28th, it says, why am I still obsessed with weight? I'm abstaining, I'm trying to work the steps, but I can't give up the scale. I'm terrified to stop the constant monitoring of my weight. What if I gain? How will I know if I don't weigh? The problem is, I'm trying to work this program without giving up control. But is that possible? The first three steps make it clear that those who wrote them and millions who followed proved they could only recover by letting a power outside themselves regulate their unmanageable lives. If I say I have faith in a higher power, I can take the next step and turn my weight over to that power. I can concentrate on taking the action, abstaining and working the steps, and leave the results to God. For today, if I stop supervising my weight loss, it will be taken care of in God's time. I pray for the willingness to do that. So I talked to you today at 205 pounds. That's not really where I'd like to be. I'd like to be at like 150 pounds. But I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do. And I've found that when I reach a plateau, and I've reached a few plateaus during my time in OA, there's something else I'm supposed to learn. And I have to discover what that is. That usually takes me back to working through the steps again and figuring out what it is that I'm supposed to learn. That seems to be how my higher power is working with me, and I don't question it. That's just the way that I'm supposed to work this program, so I do. In Voices of Recovery, on the reading for January the 9th, it says, this willingness to act on faith, then, was the key to step two. Acting on faith means standing without my defenses to protect me and assuming that my higher power will do the right thing for me, will give me what I need, if not what I want. Isn't that true? Yes. Acting on faith means believing my higher power will always listen and encourage me when I'm in a situation in which I have to take risks. My higher power will walk with me through the scary situations and will be with me to the end when the trials are over. That's acting on faith. I am not a fan of change. I like to refer to myself as rut girl. I like to be in that rut. I like to know what happens every day, and I don't like surprises. Wow. I've been shook to my core in OA. Over and over and over again, I have been pushed and encouraged to step off and believe that I'm going to be okay, that I've got to try something new. I have to give up all of those things that I thought were keeping me safe and trust that my higher power knows where I'm going. I've yet to find a new experience that was not wonderful. So now I really try, and I still struggle, but I really try to remember that I take a deep breath, I push through that fear, and on the other side there's always something better. And that's the way it's been for me all these years in program. On January 10th, in Voices of Recovery, it says, as we become aware of what our eating guidelines should be, we ask God for the willingness and the ability to live within them each day. We ask and we receive, first the willingness and then the ability. We can count on this without fail. I had a hard time figuring out how to deal with this mentality in my head that I had to have certain foods in my house for people that came over. And often those foods in my house were the kind of things that I actually couldn't have, that were toxic to me. And someone in program said to me, you know, if you had a child with a peanut allergy, you would never have anything with peanuts in your house. You would protect them. So why can't you do that for yourself? Wow, that was a fish in the forehead moment. So I cleaned out my house. I'm fortunate in that I live alone. So I'm able to get rid of the things that were triggers for me, and I simply don't have them in my house or in my life. When I see them in the store or I see them at other people, the message that my higher power gives me is, you don't eat that anymore, or you're allergic. That makes you sick. You can't have it. I'm able to let go that way, and I'm really grateful for that awareness. It goes on January 10th. It says, at a time in my recovery when I could not stay abstinent, the words without fail offered me comfort and hope. When I could do nothing else, I could pray on my knees every day, no matter what, for the willingness and the ability to be abstinent. The miracle is that the willingness came and then the ability. I continue to ask God for the willingness and ability to be abstinent daily, and it continues to work. I believe that just as God grants me the willingness and the ability to be abstinent, He helps me overcome my character defects. If I pray for the willingness and the ability to do God's will, I will receive the willingness and then the ability. Thank you, God. Just for a moment, I just want to remind you that this workshop is being recorded and it'll be posted on the OA website podcast page, as well as other podcast feeds like iTunes. When we get to the point of open sharing, if you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your name recorded and posted. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name, if you like, when you share. And also, just as a reminder, we are self-supporting through our own contributions, and even though this is a virtual meeting, please use the special workshop meeting number 82278 when making your contribution. You can go to www.oa.org and click on contributions. And I thank you for helping us to carry the message. Okay, I love Lifeline. I've been a subscriber to Lifeline since I came into program. I often alternate between getting paper copies or getting electronic copies. Out of the February 2011 edition of Lifeline, I read this little bit. It says, breathing room. The AA 12 and 12 has a quotation regarding the inclination that many have to balk at taking step two. The quotation is, and I love this, the hoop that you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think. This quote tells us not to get our panties in a bunch over step two. It means many ways exist for approaching your higher power, so try not to get hung up on which one is the right one. Just find one that works for you. All that's required is an open mind and the willingness to reach toward a higher power, even if you're only acting as if. Making those small attitude adjustments can bring huge rewards, and giving this fabulous OA program a chance to work for you. This quote poses the question, are you going to let your negative religious / God perceptions stop you from reaching for recovery? I thought that was great. This is the February 2014 edition of Lifeline. Again, it's talking about step two, and it says, the bridge. Confiding in my higher power is such help in this business of being abstinent while living life on life's terms. I want to be skillful in sharing what step two can be because it's so pivotal. Without strong reliance on step two as a bridge, from the powerlessness of step one to the resolve of step three, frustration seems unavoidable. I think it's so important that we remember that taking step two, accepting step two, gets us going. Without that, I don't know if we can move through the rest of the step. I think it's key. It has been for me. In the AA 12 and 12, on page 33, and I have an old edition of it, so I'm not sure if this is still a current page number, but it's the very end of step two, and this just echoes out of the February 2014 Lifeline. It says, therefore, step two is the rallying point for all of us, whether agnostic, atheist, or former believer, we can stand together on this step. True humility and an open mind can lead us to faith. And every meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves to Him. So I have a couple of questions that I'm going to give you as homework. Your choice, whether you follow through on the questions or not, but I thought it might be interesting. And these questions are from the OA 12-step workbook, starting with question number 11, which is on page 18. And it says, have I come to believe that I need to change? and then why? Question number 14, and this is your second question, and that's on page 19, is how do I feel about replacing my old ideas about God with a faith that works? And the last question is question number 15, and it's what actions am I willing to take that others have told me worked for them? I'll repeat those questions again. Number one, have I come to believe that I need to change, and why? The second question, how do I feel about replacing my old ideas about God with a faith that works? And the third question, what actions am I willing to take that others have told me worked for them? Before I open this up, I just want to remind you that according to the Seventh Tradition, we're self-supporting to our own contributions. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278 when making your contribution. While this workshop has no direct expenses, our Seventh Tradition reminds us that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. You can go to www.oa.org and click on contributions. Thank you very much for helping us to carry the message. So I'm going to open this up for some sharing because I think we have quite a few people on the line. So again, just as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded and it will be posted on the OA website podcast page as well as other podcast feeds like iTunes. If you speak, it's considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. So to preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name when you share. And the opinions expressed here today are those of the individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I think we can open it up for sharing now.
Yes, I'd like to share. I'd like to share how this first speaker talked about how God is there with us always, no matter what we're in or what we're doing. And I'm just really thankful for that. And I'll pass it on.
Hi, this is Tina. Thank you very much, Mary. That was great. A lot of good work between all the OA sources and resources, so I appreciate it. I had taken the time to read this again before the workshop, and our keys were very similar as to what I found important. The one that really struck me, one of the ones I should say, was we were meant up so that we might learn to truly love others. That just really struck me today. I also liked what you talked about in terms of this being almost the jumping point. If I don't embrace this, then, you know, I'm only hurting myself. By not sharing myself with others, I am denying them the opportunity to see the real me and the me that my higher power is helping me to be as I continue to work and study these steps. But if I don't open up, I also am denying them that opportunity to show me what their higher power wants them to be. You know, it's just an interesting phenomenon. There's a section in step two where it says, there are times that my sponsor will fail me, and I've always, or my group will fail me. And I always have problems with that statement because my sponsor never failed me. My group never failed me. That was when I, egotistical Tina, had unrealistic expectations as to what someone should bring, what someone should be. And by opening up myself, letting others open up, it becomes more realistic as to what that possibility is. And again, that possibility is relying on higher power greater than myself. Mary, thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing some other folks.
Thanks, Tina.
Hi, this is Cheryl, and the question I'd like to talk about and share about is what actions am I willing to take that others have told me work for them? And I feel like I'm really right in the middle of that that question right now, or maybe that answer. Essentially, I'm thinking about the food and the food plan, and that my sponsor and the former sponsor and a nutritionist had given me plans of eating, and I followed them, but changing from one sponsor to the next, things changed a little bit, and only just recently my food plan changed because of a conversation where it came out that, oh, this sponsor did not have artificial sweeteners, and my previous sponsor did, and so I had had sweeteners before, and now I'm all of a sudden, okay, going to change my food plan and not have artificial sweeteners anymore. And I feel like I'm just in the beginning stages of that because it's only been a few days. The thing was, as I've shared in my phone calls with people, I'm willing to do, out of respect for my sponsor and the whole system here that that works, I'm willing to do this because it works for my sponsor, and she has had success with this. Others have told me about this, and it's worked for them. It's amazing, though, what power few packets can have over me, that it's such a big deal to have to give them up, but apparently it is a big deal because I've been talking about it for the last few days since this came to light. I am grateful for that willingness. I am amazed that I have actually been able to not have the sweeteners over the last few days, and it's also so helpful for me to call in and just hear other people's stories and hear about what they're going through, and I'm grateful for programs.
Thank you.
Bunny, I'm Eileen. I'm an overeater. Hi, thank you for your service today. It was really great to hear your story and to hear about the second step. For me, my higher power, I choose to call God. And, you know, I was raised, brought to church every Sunday, forced to sing in the church choir and blah, blah, blah. And at that point, the God of my understanding was somebody that I just had contact with either when I was in church or saying my prayers at night, as I was taught to do as a little girl. But through recovery, my concept of God has changed so much. Today, I have a loving God with me all the time, 24/7. And how I've used God in the second step was if and when I want to eat something that's either on my alcoholic list or get out of portion control, I do pray to God, please remove this. Along with that, and restore me to sanity. Because the insanity part is to think that I could have just one of something, anything that's alcoholic, or that I could start getting out of portion control and not get a grip back on it. So thank you for letting me share.
Hi, this is Linda. May I share?
Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much, Mary. I really like that, the idea that step two is a bridge from step one to three. I like to have pictures in my mind, and that helps me think about this. I'll have to go back and look at that Lifeline article to read a little more about that. Yeah, and then the other quote about, if I'm having trouble, it's because I'm trying to work the steps without giving up control. I really like that quote, that in order to do step two, I'm giving up the control, and then three is I've given it over to a higher power. So I really like those. And then there was another thing you said, another picture, that if you had a child with a peanut allergy, you wouldn't have those kind of foods in your house. So why can't you do that for yourself? And that when someone said that, that was enough to motivate you to get those foods out of the house. And I too had the same feeling, that I wasn't worth God's trouble. He's busy solving world peace and all of those things. He doesn't need to bother with my food, but in reality, he does care. I'm glad that I have found a higher power and I'm able to turn the control of my will and my life over to him. And thanks so much.
Hi, this is Meg. May I share?
Go ahead, Meg.
Thanks very much, Mary, for your share. I love what you said about step two and the readings you read. Some of the things that I learned from my sponsor were that when I was really crazy about all the food stuff, that's what I loved about step two and our 12 and 12, that it really just laid it all out, all the crazy stuff that I had done. And my sponsor said, well, is there anything you can do just for today? And I chose something for that day, and the next day I realized I had done what I said I would do, and it felt really good. That was the start of my learning one day at a time to be abstinent. I wasn't abstinent right from that get-go, but that was a big learning. And then also to realize that my higher power cared about what I ate, that it was important, because two things. One, when I'm into the food, there's nothing can get through to me. It's just me and the food, and my higher power can't get, I'm not listening. So higher power cares that I don't get into the food so I can listen to guidance. I had to really test my higher power about that. So I would bring home groceries, and maybe it had a bag of stuff in it, and I take that bag out, and I said, okay, higher power, if you don't want me to eat this, you got to do something right now. And invariably, something would happen. My attention would be taken away from that bag by a phone call or seeing the dishes in the sink I needed to wash them, or when I had a dog, it came up to me and wanted to go for a walk, or I looked out and saw the trees or the sunshine, and then I get involved in something else, come back to that bag, and I didn't want to eat it anymore, and it was a miracle to me, and it was my higher power working in my life. I'm really grateful to have that higher power, thanks to the step two. Thank you.
Thanks, Meg.
This is Jerry. Can I share?
Yes, please.
Hello, thank you. I'm Jerry, an abstinent food addict compulsive eater. In recovery 21 years and maintaining a 100-plus pound weight loss. And thanks so much for this, you know, even new insights on step two. And I love that it is a bridge between not having any power to getting to that point where you think, well, maybe there is a power out there greater than me and greater than food, which was really the power in my life, that could restore some sanity to me. And then when I get to step three, I'm able to look at another power that could help me to restore me to sanity. So I really love that description. And, you know, if they ever do ask me to rewrite the steps for them, which I know they never will, I'm actually reading the new OA3 book, and I'm in the middle of Roseanne's story and how she initially did change the steps to take words like God out. And it just tickles me that through, you know, our effective group conscience, we helped Roseanne to see that that really was a good idea. We now have the steps the same as they are in AA, except for changing alcohol to food and alcoholic to compulsive eater. So thanks very much for letting me share.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hi, Gloria. May I share?
Yes, please.
Hi, Mary. It was wonderful to hear you. Again, you have such a great, powerful story. One of the things you mentioned was the line in the AA 12 and 12 about, on step two, about the hoops that you have to jump through being very wide. And that was always gave me a great comfort, because initially I struggled a little, not so much with two, but three. And it was really the people I met in the rooms, people like yourself and everyone who's participating in these, that really made me believe that recovery was possible for me as well. So I really so much appreciate your service. Thanks, and I look forward to more workshops.
Thanks, Gloria.
Hi, I'm Natalie, compulsive overeater. May I share?
Yes, please.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Mary, for your share and everyone else's share, too. I was sitting here thinking, what does it mean to be restored to sanity? In a lot of ways, I have never been sane, so being restored to it is kind of a new ground. It's like I am someplace that I've never been before. But one of the most amazing ways I've been restored to sanity is through a quality of consistency. One of the things that's the most powerful in my recovery, I've been in the program almost 5 years and have 75-plus pounds of weight loss. And the reason I was able to achieve that, one of the reasons, is this quality of consistency. I email my food to my sponsor every day. I attend meetings regularly. I write in the steps regularly. So there's a lot of other things I do. And when I was in the food, the only thing I did consistently was eat and go to the food. That was my higher power. And then everything else in my life, I would try. You know, I wanted to lose weight, so I would go on a diet. But I would do it for a week and stop. And I would go back to eating food, or I would anything in my life, not just the food. I would try to get a new job, and I would do something for a week and then stop, or for a day and then stop, or even a month and then stop. I never was consistent. I thought it was so boring to be that way. That just really came up for me while I was sitting here listening to you all and thinking, one of the most powerful actions I've been taking, we talked about that, one of the questions had to do with that, was was to be consistent. Even if what I'm doing is very small, to keep doing it every day, one day at a time, taking the consistent action, it has a huge snowball effect. And so many of the promises have come true in my life because of that willingness to be consistent, where before I wasn't. I just wanted to share that and say thanks. I'm so glad everyone's on the call.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, can I share?
Yes, please.
Hi. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, speaker. I really enjoyed all you had to say. I got a kick out of leveling things off. I've never heard anybody talk about that, but that was very consistent with my disease, was having to try to hide it and level everything off. So I have been in Overeaters Anonymous for over 25 years. I do have to say I've had some long periods of relapse, but I am in recovery today. And step two, I realized recently, is probably the step that carried me through those relapses. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and it was the hope in that that kept me in OA and kept me going and got me in recovery again. And I liked what you said about act on faith, because I, for many years, especially in relapse, after finding a faith in this program, I had the faith, but I had not learned to act on it. And I've had to learn to act on that faith and do what I'm being told to do, call my sponsor every day, be abstinent with my food, and I am forever grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mary. I'm at Interact for Kelly McNair.
Yes, please.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for sharing. I'm only on here today. My sponsor had sent this on an email out earlier today, so I was just really grateful to be on here. I've not listened to this before, but I just really appreciate what was shared about working the program or asking God to come into your life but still wanting to be in control. And I know that, you know, my sponsor and people have told me that so much in the past, but somehow how you shared it today just really rung true with me. And I've had 5 years of not throwing up, but I'm still running my life and running my program and running, controlling my weight and doing everything the way that I want to do it, except throwing up. 5 years into recovery, I'm feeling every bit as miserable as I did before recovery. So I know something's not going right. So I wrote down your questions, and I just really appreciate all you guys being on here, and it feels good to be back. I haven't been to an OA meeting, and I don't even know how long. Just appreciate being here today. Thanks.
Keep coming back.
Hi, I'm Pam, compulsive overeater. May I share?
Yes, please, Pam.
I enjoyed your story very much. I appreciate, Mary, all that you had to say. But what got me the most was the fish in the forehead moment. I never knew what it was called when you came to an awakening and God smacked you on the head. I thought that was terrific, and it just made me laugh. And I appreciate all that you said. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pam.
This is Ann L. from Washington State. Can I share?
Yes, please.
I just want to really thank you so much, Mary. I've never heard your story before. It just was loaded with such great information and insight and deep feeling that it really got through to me. One of the things that you said that just totally jumped out at me is that this recovery process that we're in goes through different levels and stages. It's not something that I'm going to get overnight. It's something that I'm going to just gradually grow with and in, that the root of it all is spirituality. For the last, few months and off for the last couple of years, really, I've been, after 14 years of 100-pound weight loss and 90-day OA, I've been flirting with the idea that I could do things my way again. And I've just been really kind of shocked and confused at that discovery. But lately, I've come to understand that what it's signaling me is that I'm at one of those plateaus and I'm ready to really grow in a strongly in another direction around spirituality. And one of the things I've come to see is that for the first 14 years, what I've really been doing is what one of the things you said, still hanging on to my own willfulness and my own need to control what was going on with me around food, that really what I've been doing is white knuckling it out of fear of losing my abstinence, fear of so many different kinds of fears. And I'm at the stage now and ready, finally, after all these years, I'm finally ready for step three. And that what I really need to do now is to go back and rework step one, two, and three, and this time do it with an open heart and an open mind and get ready for a huge change in my life, because I can see that when I really live in harmony, breath by breath, with my spiritual power, when I'm really doing that, life happens, unfolds in an entirely different way than it's ever unfolded before. So it's an adventure, this program that we're in. I'm ready for the next level of the adventure now. Your wonderful share today helped me move closer to the faith that it'll take to live in this new way. So I want to thank you very much, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Anne. How great to hear your voice.
Hi, my name is Pat. What I'd like to say is, it's like a member of the clergy of the church that I was raised in, although I hadn't been going for years, being in the 12 steps and really working the program versus, you know, because I'd been so angry at God for so long. So here was this alcoholic in recovery person really kind of reading out. I've been able to, you know, be in recovery. He's been dead now for several years. But I know that he was sent to me by God. And what's also very humbling to me is how, even after 25 years in this last several months, I realized that my food needed to be cleaner and made those changes, thank God, by talking to a lot of recovery people and whatnot. And so it's just humbling to me how I thought initially when I came in, oh, gosh, people that had 5 years, well, they really made it. And how I just keep learning more and how much more there is to let go of. So thanks so much, and thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. I think we'd like to close now, but again, I'll tell you that the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Next month, on March the 8th, will be step three. Till then, stay in your shoes and keep coming back.